Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
After the lights go out on Talk Sport.
I'm Steve Harmison. I've played in 63 tests, 58 one-day internationals for England and won the Ashes twice for my country.
And I'm Leon McKenzie. I've experienced life as a Premier League footballer and a professional boxer. In this series, we're focusing on elite athletes and their transition from professional sport to civilian life.
We both enjoyed the highs and lows unique to professional sport, a vocation which can lead to adulation and riches beyond the means of the vast majority of people.
However, we've also struggled with what followed when our respective careers came to an end, with the roar of the crowd becoming a fading memory and the adrenaline-fueled lifestyle was no more. Tonight on TalkSport, we speak with a double women's Super League title winner, World Cup bronze medalist and Olympian, the Chelsea and England great, Claire Rafferty.
We'll be joined by Claire in a moment, but before we are, can I just say, Leon, how much I'm looking forward to this chat with one of the stars of the Women's Super League. She made her mark in a fine Chelsea side and also with England at the World Cup. And I'm looking forward to hearing her story after retiring last year.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this interview. It's going to be fascinating to the point of what Claire has to share with us. And what stands out for me is the three major knee injuries she had going through the process of playing at top levels. Her story is fascinating and I believe that she's going to pass on some great knowledge, and I cannot wait to hear her story properly and for you listeners to hear what Claire Rafferty has got to say.
After the lights go out, Leon McKenzie and Steve Harmison in conversation with Claire Rafferty on Talk Sport.
Claire, absolutely over the moon to have you in the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Claire, it's just been over a year since you retired from football after playing for West Ham in the FA Cup final against Manchester City. When did you decide it was time to bring a chapter to finishing?
You know what, in my head, even from an early age, I always thought, past the age of 30, I never really saw myself playing football. And for reasons I don't really know why, but I think because I had so many big injuries from a young age, and the fact that at the time when I got into football, it was never really a choice as a job. I kind of stumbled into something that I was good at, and then all of a sudden it became a full-on commitment. And I think leaving Chelsea and going to West Ham, I think in my eyes I was only ever going to do that for a year. When I signed, you know, Matt Beer had open dialogue for pretty much 6 months prior to me actually retiring, and you know, I'd go into the office and we'd discuss it. I've known him a long time. He used to manage at Chelsea prior to Emma Hayes era, and it was very much about, what do you want to do, make sure this is the best decision for you. And it just felt like the right time. Also, when someone runs past you for that first time and you drop their shoulder, they drop the shoulder, I'm like no, you know what, I've got to call it a day, I think.
Claire, honestly, I played in all the leagues,
yeah.
But when I played non-league for a little while, just to kind of, you know, the love of the game and the passion that you want to sort of hang on to it. But honestly, I was playing non-league and I remember one centre-half whispering in my ear and he goes, McKenzie, you're not all that.
Oh, ouch.
And you know when it's like, oh, wow. And I think I must have been about 33, 34 at the time. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, oh, wow, it's time. Because
it's a pride, isn't it? It's a pride in the ego.
It is.
And like when actually they're right, and you're like, you know what, I was, And I still got it, but I can't move the same way.
Yeah, I was very much in and out of games around that sort of time. My body didn't move the same anymore, as you probably knew.
You don't admit it though, do you? At the time, you just
well, when someone's telling you about yourself, then.
I didn't admit it, Steve. I didn't admit it. I was like, mate, you're probably going to be here all your career.
Yeah,
exactly. I played in all English, like leave me alone. Like, you know what I mean? I started biting.
At the probably the whole of the season at West Ham, I felt myself being incredibly frustrated with myself just for the fact that I was like, I'm sure I'm better than this. You know, when you have that expectation of yourself, I'd walk off the pitch and be quite upset just because I'd be like, what's going on? Like, why am I not living up to who I am or who I was?
Yeah.
But, Cleb, the decision to play football must have been a relatively difficult one because, you know, you were a Loughborough educated going into sort of working in the banking sector, and then all of a sudden there's this, is it a dream, is it something, because the financial resources of football in female football and it is in male football is not, it's a bit the same as what I had in cricket, where first class cricket you earn a good living, international cricket you earn a ridiculous living, but in the job sector, if you had a decent job, you were probably on par with first class cricketers. So to actually make the step to go football, how tough was that from a mental point of view going forward and then finishing football? When was it a mental decision to go, you know what, I've had enough of this, I'm going to get my life back, if anything?
Yeah, and I think playing football as a full-time job was never a choice in my eyes. I'd never had the option growing up. I never, you know, woke up as a child and went, I want to be a professional footballer, because actually when I used to run out into the garden, I used to be Michael Owen or Steven Gerrard. I was never Kelly Smith or Rachel Yankee because I didn't see them. So I just used to love football. And I remember a stage when I got told, you need to choose my commitment was being questioned. And I couldn't really get my head around it because I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, you pay me below minimum wage. Why am I going to give up something that pays me more for being there for 2 days a week than you do? But at the same time, I felt almost ungrateful because actually people would dream to be in this position. Mm. There was a strange balance for it. And I remember being questioned a lot about my commitment to England. One of the England managers would question, do you want this? Are you going to be able to commit as much? Because at that time, we did go full time. And if I'm having to run off the pitch at 12 o'clock to get on the train going to the city from Cobham, am I recovering properly? Am I eating properly? Am I concentrating on what I'm doing? Yeah, I thought it was, and I did. And I probably got away with it because of the fact that at the time the game wasn't where it is now. You can never do that now. And I actually feel like I was quite fortunate to be able to maintain both, because it's allowed me to kind of step away in a way that probably others wouldn't be able to.
Did you feel that was an easy excuse for people to throw at you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know what football's like.
Mm. Never from a commitment point of view.
Yeah.
Your heart's not in it.
Karen Khan used to always say to me, never give someone a reason. Never give someone a reason to drop you. And I remember thinking, well, I need to pay my bills though. So it was an easy excuse, but actually I was fortunate enough to be surrounded by some incredibly strong leaders. So Hope Powell at the time, she was so influential in actual education. Mm. And when I went to Loughborough, she encouraged, you know, studies and would actually encourage us getting jobs and stuff like that. And Emma Hayes was great. Mm. And as I said, I think the timing-wise, I didn't face too many issues with it, to be fair, in the end.
I mean, I think that's fantastic because you've had, like, the fundamentals of studying and going down the university route to obviously work. Is it Dutch Bank he's working?
Deutsche Bank, yeah. So I worked there for, like, 7 years.
Yeah, exactly. So
I used to walk into Deutsche Bank after coming back from a World Cup and people are like, where have you been?
That's
I'm like, wait a minute, I just won a bronze medal. What are you talking about?
It's grounding and it's humbling.
Yeah.
You know, you've just won a World Cup medal and then you're going into a normal sort of work, which brings me to the next question about there's an athlete life.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything's done for us. Everything's laid out for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's very privileged in a lot of ways. Has its ups and downs, but it is very privileged. To then someone that's on the outside in an average sort of 9-to-5 job, you're able to identify what it's like to be in a normal job and also playing top flight football. The problem we've got is within football at the moment is I know that there's been many, many players who have finished their careers. And one player, I think it was at Stevenage, who said, I don't even know what it's going to be like to have an interview for
a
job.
You know what? That actually gives me like goosebumps because it's scary, isn't it?
Do you see what
it's
I mean?
It's scary. I'm so like, passionate about the same way you talk about it. You know, like the structure that is surrounded by footballers, the bubble. Women's football was never really like that, but because it's professionalised and because, as you said, you go in, you get your breakfast, you get your accommodation paid for, these people don't know how to even pay the bills. So the life experience you get in football is fantastic, and it does bring you them attributes which are transferable into work environment. But if you can't actually apply that and you don't know how to apply that, that is where the gap in that is.
I was going to say that about what you just saying there, Claire. How was the help from that? Because I know from personal experience, I used to describe when I finished playing, it was like coming out of the supermarket with heavy shopping bags in my hands, not knowing where my car was for like 6 months. I had, you're looking around, you're thinking, well, for 18 years, I've wore a tracksuit.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I miss wearing a tracksuit.
Yeah. But I've been told what to do.
Choosing my outfit every day.
Yeah. And it's, well, up at Durham, it was, you get on the bus, you wear your tracksuit, you eat here, you play there. And for 18 years, I'm doing that. And then I finished playing, and for 6 months, I've got my head in the clouds thinking, like I mentioned, you come out of the supermarket with heavy bags of shopping, not knowing where your car is, thinking, I've got no money coming in now because I'm finished playing. I've got four kids, and then all of a sudden, them bags are getting heavier and heavier. And if you haven't got the right advice and you haven't got the right people around you, it can spiral. And the PC, the Cricket Association, is very, very good. I'm sure you've advised, but what sort of level of advice did you get moving out of the game into the like social life, into normal life?
Having actually prepared myself for that moment of retiring, thinking I've done everything I could do, have a job, have the experience, my bags were still heavy. I walked out of the shopping centre with, 20 litres of water. That's how heavy it felt. And it's strange. And I think it was more so because actually I was like, oh, I still feel lost. I still feel a lack of identity. The facade and the front you put on with football, that's gone. So who am I now, actually? Because growing up as quite an introvert, football was the way I was able to communicate, and that kind of shield was removed. So the advice-wise, I think I never probably asked at first because everyone assumed I'd be fine because I've had the job, I had everything.
Right.
Which was then an added kind of pressure on myself, because when you're struggling with stuff like that and then people assume that you're fine... To be honest, I didn't really get a great deal of advice because I didn't ask for it, but also no one knew that I needed it.
Well, I think the point is there is that even though you didn't ask for it,
especially
when I look at your story with the three major ACL injuries, which is like massive from an early age, for someone that goes through those type of injuries, which I had done myself in my career with like, 8, 9 month, 10 month layouts, psychologically is... really damaging.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever have anyone within your team to say, like, are you all right? Like, how are you? Like, because it's very lonely.
Yeah.
I saw you in an interview. I think you'd done something in some film.
Pre-World Cup thing.
And you mentioned football, it became exhausting.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of negativity involved in football in my head.
Right. So
there's a lot of negative association to football. Which sounds strange, but you know how it is. Like, Steve, you'll know as well, like, cricket-wise, there's so many failures that people don't really see. They only really see, the times that they do see, but, like, you walk away and you've won the bronze medal, you've won FA Cups, you've won whatever, but the damage of, as you're saying, the long-term injuries, the loneliness, going into the gym by yourself for the whole time, being told you're never going to be the same player. I guess support-wise, I've been incredibly fortunate to have fantastic family, but even when I think back, it was I guess England always had psychologists and Chelsea would always supply the option to and you know what, at the time I was so it was only the third time which bothered me, and I went traveling up the tennis coach.
2013, right?
Yeah.
And you jumped up for a header.
Yeah.
And when you came down.
Yeah, against Everton.
So what was going through your mind then? Because when I it was towards the back end of my career, when I sort of reached the 30, 31 mark, and I was struggling with a knee problem anyway. I had like three operations on my knee and pretty much had one knee. Like second half of my career. You know, it's like training wise and structure. But when I ruptured my Achilles, I knew that I don't think I'm going to get back from this. Yeah. And I know like when you landed... What was going through your mind?
I knew straight away that I'd done it. And I thought, this isn't meant to be. Just stop. What are you doing? it's not worth it. I was just so feeling sorry for myself. I remember walking off the pitch with the physio. He did the test, the old ACL test, and he just looked at me and I thought, oh.
Is that not natural? It's a natural feeling that you do feel sorry for yourself. You do want to go inside yourself rather than go outside yourself.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who's always been quite quiet anyway and not the best communicator, it was quite a natural thing for me to do that. I think the habit of that is exactly where that probably has stemmed from a young age, doing it at the age of 15, 16. Just suck it up, sort it out yourself. There's so many different kind of elements and pillars to the psychological effects it has on you. Sport, being successful, not being. It's just a constant roller coaster, isn't it?
Since retiring, you've struggled with one aspect. You talk about identity. Having been a professional footballer for all your adult life, do you feel lost without having that title, pro footballer, next to your name?
Yeah, you know what? And I think the hardest thing is when people go, oh, ex-footballer. You've lost that identity, but then you become the ex, and ex is a negative connotation. I was interpreting it like that. And it's a difficult one. So lost, yes. I didn't really realise I was going to feel that lost. I didn't realise, actually, I think I was trying to play down how important football was in my life because I knew it was going to end. So almost preparing myself in the long run, having, you know, the different careers and investing education-wise, I was naive to think that I would feel that loss, and I think that's why it actually probably hit me harder.
You made a statement about not being able to do what you really love, which stood out for me, because when I was sort of not being able to control me wanting to play football and wanting to play at the highest level, my mind started breaking down. Mm-hmm. So when did you know, like, it was like, I'm really struggling to hold on to this? And I really want to keep playing, but you know it's coming. What did your mind do? And where did you, I mean, I suffered from depression for a number of years, more so towards the back end of my career. But I was quite late being vocal about it. Did you have any signs?
You know what? When I look back now, I think the majority of the last season at West Ham, I was quite low and didn't even really realise myself. And that probably comes down to the fact that I didn't enjoy playing football, because every time I stepped onto the pitch, one, I was in pain with one reason or the other, hamstring, Achilles, calf. Two, I wasn't the player that I used to be. And three, I was like, I left my club as well. So there was an element of almost heartbreak, or like a leaving Chelsea was the end in my eyes. And I think I wanted to continue and go back to controlling situations. I had a fantastic year at West Ham. Ending my career in the FA Cup final with them was incredible. But the way I had to battle to be on that pitch, because of, like, fitness wise, the amount of painkillers I was taking in the end to even get on the pitch. When you go, you know what? It's not, just stop. It's not worth it.
How was how was your support network, as in the people around you? Because, you know, a lot of professional sportsmen and women will leave their profession because that's all they've had. But did you feel a little bit fortunate that you had a support network that you work with from a banking sector and in that side, or as well as the football side? So it was easy just to push one aside and I've still got my friends from there. Or was it hard to detach and reinvent Claire Rafferty?
Yeah, it was very hard to reinvent myself almost. And I think bank-wise, so I actually retired and quit Deutsche Bank in like the same week. And then I went on to work at Chelsea.
5 days later.
Yeah.
So you retired and then five days later was in Chelsea.
Yeah, I didn't give myself any time.
That's interesting.
Yeah, which I should have done. I really regret that.
That's what I wanted to speak to you about, because to do that, that's kind of taking on... Maybe you've done that in the respect of, you know, like...
I didn't want to stop and think about it.
Right, that's what I mean.
Or you're holding on to football.
Yeah, and you know, like, I think friendship-wise, you talk about support group, like, I miss going into training and having the banter with friends, being in a team that I've been at so long. I have had really good friends there. Mm. And, it's really difficult. I'm at Chelsea, but I don't see anyone. I'm on the business side of it, and I'm grateful for that, because going in, you know, Emma would always say, come in when you want, like, because, you know, she's very aware of how difficult that is. And I'd be like, I don't want to, I can't go and sit in the training ground, because it hurts almost. It's strange feeling. But yeah, I guess like work-wise, Deutsche Bank were incredible with me, but I felt like I didn't fit in there because I didn't really enjoy it that much. It wasn't really who I was, and I knew I wasn't going to do that forever as well. So I just got rid of everything at once.
Do you think you more, I guess, when you went to university and you go through that, is that investment banking kind of process?
Yeah, I did an economics degree.
Yeah.
So like 4 years, yeah.
So did you think that provided stability?
Yeah, I had that to fall back on.
Yeah.
And this is why I encourage all the girls now, please do some online courses or do something that's going to give you, even in your own head, because you know what? Anyone can go and get a degree. It doesn't mean you're guaranteed anything, but it's something to make, it made me feel better. Knowing that if I get one more ACL, and I think I'm grateful for the injuries because it allowed me to focus and prioritise that. So something that actually was quite negative has allowed me to be able to have an income now.
Mm.
So there's so many back and forths that like how I feel about things.
Claire, does it make you want to reach out to players in the women's game when you can see either somebody's got injured or somebody's had some troubled time, or you can possibly, or you hear the whisper that, you know, somebody's struggling mentally from whatever, anxiety, depression or anything like that. Does it make you want to reach out and go, do you know what, here's my number, give me a ring and we can go for a coffee?
Yeah, this is something that I'm actually trying to put in place. Just kind of almost like a mentorship opportunity for I don't want to sit there and preach to these players, because if you don't want to hear it, you don't want to hear it. But just saying to them, and I've said to a player that I've known a long, long time, who's 33 now, can continue playing, I've just said, make sure that, think about the decision. Because I tell you what, it's not easy. Make sure you think about it. If you have a choice, and in fact you have a choice, make sure you really, 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 really want to do that. You want to retire, because it's not all rosy.
It's a long time retired, basically.
Because listen, going to the pub on a Saturday is not all it cracks up to be. Well, I mean, you know what?
I don't know.
Right. I'll take that back.
So the reason why I'm calling you the 15-year-old prodigy, because I didn't know that at 15 years old, you got called up for the under-19 England side.
Yeah.
That's massive. You can pick yourself up with that one, because you're 15 years old and you're paying 4 years ahead of your time.
You know what?
What like, was it like doing that?
I hate being away from home.
Oh, wow.
Me and you both. I couldn't.
You know what? I loved it, terrible. But I was such a shy kid that I never really took any of it on board. I was playing football and that's all I wanted to do. Like, to be fair, I think that was the first time, and I was grateful for Mo Marley, who was almost like a mum figure for in the 19s. And when you speak to the kids now, they all say the same about her. There's no coincidence that the majority of England players have been kind of nurtured through her. She allowed you to fail, but was the harshest person ever, but made it okay to do that. So when I think back to that 15 years old, being very shy, I was someone who you wouldn't notice if you walked in the room. So the pressure that suddenly came from actually being, you know, meant the reputation or the potential that I had. I think from that kind of age, that's when I started feeling like I'd be sitting in the car on the way to a game and I'd be like a nervous wreck.
See, it's amazing to be called, you know, 4 years ahead of your time.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that you've actually put more pressure on yourself because of the being away from home. Mm-hmm. Steve, you know, when you was away from home, you found that quite hard, right?
I was terrible.
It's horrible, isn't it?
I struggled big time when I was younger coming through. The homesickness tag with me, you were talking about earlier, about if you didn't perform and the human element, you would get some stick off the media saying, well, he doesn't like being away from home. Mine turned into... It turned heavily into anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
I went away from as a 19-year-old. And some of the away, I think 2007, I think, I stayed in 300 nights in a hotel bed out of 365. So it shows you
how
much...
It gives me
anxiety. It's ridiculous. But I used the homesickness tag as a little bit of a crutch, which was quite good, because I was quite happy people saying I was homesick, because underlining that, I knew there was an underlying problem. I had clinical depression.
Yeah.
I suffered from anxiety, and a lot of that was going away from home.
Yeah.
But the minute I said, I've got this, is the minute I finished playing cricket, because people will not pick me anymore. Yeah. There's a stigma, there was a tag to it at that time. We're talking about early 2000s, mid-2000s. Yeah. It's a bit different now. Did you ever feel, as you were getting older, that from that early age, you're struggling to be away from home, did catch up with you and you did feel sort of depressed and did have these thoughts going through your mind.
You know what? The thought even now of going to a hotel makes me feel a certain way. It's so weird. Like going to away games, I used to hate it.
Yeah, I did.
Like I hated it so much. Yeah, I think it is the correlation between the pressure. Yeah, feeling very, very low by yourself when you actually are not allowed to feel like that because it looks like weakness and you can't say it to anyone else because everyone else looks fine, but they're probably thinking the same thing. It is the loneliness. And you know what I found? I got to a stage where I was able to just switch off and become very numb to emotions because that's the only way I could deal with it. Like being able to tell yourself that you don't miss someone or you don't miss your family, you don't miss being home, like that coldness, the lack of emotions that I was able to show was just strange.
So you've changed your mind in quite a lot of ways, really, because at 15
years
old...
Otherwise I wouldn't be able to cope. Yeah.
At 15 years old, to get an ACL injury at that age is quite hard to deal with anyway. And you've obviously got to get another two later on in your career. You're pretty strong in the respect of what your mind's doing, but did you ever... at that point in that process feel like, oh my gosh, like depression, like anxiety? Because I'll be honest with you, when I done mine at 21 years old, you know what it's like when you have like a major injury like that. And I was at Crystal Palace and I remember snapping my cartilage in half. I was just like, oh my gosh. And they were telling me like, Leon, you might not play again. When I heard those words, not only did I not like think that I might not play again, I was like, am I ever going to be the same again? So I think depression really, although I probably had fringes of it as a child, I think I started realising that actually I'm starting to suffer a little bit here, but I couldn't say anything. Like, where was you in your...
So I never allowed myself to accept feeling like that when actually I've always been an incredibly sensitive person. But it just goes back to from the age of 15, doing that first injury... Every single opportunity I got, I would then get a massive injury. Like the amount of England caps and the amount of times I was meant to be, you know, that left-back position for England was mine. And it never truly, truly, truly was because of the injuries. That was a struggle. And then you get, you know, after the third one, you're injury prone.
Oh, gosh, I've had that tag when you get that
You're injury
tag,
prone. And then I would get, you're uptight, that's why you get injured. And I'm uptight because actually I was anxious and I couldn't, you know, I didn't know how to deal with it, basically. And that then got associated to negative connotations, which was injuries.
Claire, did you feel as though that when you had to keep coming back and you fought that tag, but you had to keep coming back from a fitness element, do you think that helped you as not just from a physicality point of view in your career, but also a mentality point of view that you had to be at tip-top fitness to keep... your level's high, and you've always said that your mentality is always better when you're as fit as you possibly can. So having to keep coming back from fitness, keep coming back from anxiety, keep coming back from overcoming each hurdle every time you did like the ACL, do you think that helped you in a mental point of view?
I was always the fittest and the fastest, and I would always work the hardest. And I knew from a very young age that you can control what you can control, and those are them elements. I would go to the gym by myself, you know, almost twice a day sometimes, just because I didn't want anyone else to be right when they say you're not going to be the same player you were before. You might not come back from it. From the age of six, I will never forget when I was 17, an England coach telling me that I'm never going to make it to senior level because of my injuries. Only had one ACL. Sounds weird, only had one at the time. Three later on, and I went to a World Cup. And I actually, after the third one, I... told Chelsea I'm stopping playing football, packed my bag.
Where did you go, by the way? Because that's a brilliant idea, travelling wise. Oh, do you know what? Let me just go and travel.
So I went, I travelled around America. My sister takes the mickey because she says, you didn't really go travelling, did you? You just packed the bag and you tried to look like you did. I was like, no, I went by myself. And every single time I would get injured or something goes wrong, I would always go away by myself. Because you know what? When I was away, I went, I'm not done with this. I've got more still to give. So without doing that and stepping away and missing it, because I remember the Euros were on at the time, 2013, didn't watch a second of it because I couldn't, because I should have been there. But I had a moment, I was like, you know what? Nah, I'm not done here. I've got more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
After the lights go out, Leon McKenzie and Steve Harmison in conversation with Claire Rafferty on Talk Sport.
Tonight we're in a conversation with the former Chelsea, West Ham and England left-back Claire Rafferty. I'm really...
You know what? This is like therapy, this.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's funny you say that because I've spoken for a number of years now, especially after I retired. Yeah. And speaking is honestly the best therapy. And when you're sort of communicating with fellow athletes and you've got things in, you know, in kind of in the same sort of process and you've been through the same things, I think it does a world of good. That's one of the passions or reasons behind doing this show, was to see how things are truly.
It's not all glamour. People don't talk because, you know, in sport there's a it's almost like it is weakness, isn't it? If you show any kind of, you know, if I know things are changing, but still, there's a reluctance, isn't there, to actually be honest about how you feel, and it's easier to do it when you step away, because at the time you're worried that you might get, you know, dropped, or someone might use it against you, or, you know, the negativity that you feel already, you're scared that someone's going to use it against you, which is terrifying, isn't it?
And that's we talked about a bit earlier about the human element of a sportsman and sportswomen who have had difficulties behind the scenes. In describing mental health and talking about it, we have to push to people that are listening that it's not a weakness, it's an illness. The more people talk to each other and describe it and get it out there, I think the better the wider general public will understand that these sports people that we see on TV that royally entertain us and have very, very good skills and talent, they have problems as well, and they're
but
not
it's a
robots.
Show, isn't it? It's a show and an act, and when you walk off the pitch, you know, you step back into your normal life, and then when you're on it as well, I think I was actually quite grateful for the fact that women's football wasn't televised a lot when I was playing and stuff, because I don't know if I would have been able to actually deal with maybe failures in the spotlight. Saying that, at the same time, I absolutely love playing in World Cups in front of that many people. So there's, but that's because, you know, they went well.
I mean, how different is the women's game to the men's game of today? I mean, you've, like you said, it's not as highlighted as such. Where do you stand with it all?
I think, obviously, the landscape of women's football has totally changed. It's fully professionalised now. And, yes, the exposure is getting there. There's investment. The content's improving. There still needs to be a lot more investment. It's going back to the role that I do at the moment. Brands and commercial-wise, we need to keep building the infrastructure. We need people telling the stories. We need the narrative that's around it, because, you know, these women are now getting the same opportunities. And going back to opportunities, I mean, from the age of four, when, you know, one of the under four boys Chelsea team are getting kit and we don't get any kit, when they're getting the contact hours they do from that young age to actually develop their skills, and we don't, how can you expect me to be as good as someone who's had that exposure from a young age? That's what's changing now. The quality is improving, the standard, the investment in the player, you know your sleep patterns, your periods. There's so much detail that we never used to have. Even going back to S&C coaches, Chelsea have always obviously been well supported, but I know other teams, you know, back in the day didn't even have S&C coaches and didn't have any individual programs. And, you know, how is that going to be good to watch when the players are not at their best or not able to be at their best? So I think that's where, when I look at the game now, I'm excited for the generations coming through, because it's going to be fun advanced. To watch, and that's what we want. We watch football because it's fun to watch. We shouldn't compare it to men because it's different. I'm never going to win a header against you, am I, Leon? That's a good
one. Well, listen, I've seen you pop up in the back post and score a blinding header. What game was that? It was a good header.
Notts County, I think it was against.
Okay, yeah, it was, there we go. It was a big header. I was pretty.
My bet, Carly Telford was in goal. She's like a really good friend of mine. I remember thinking.
But Claire, you mentioned the game, and you're right when you say it shouldn't be compared to the men's game. But in the last sort of 5 years, the difference between the women's game to where it was to where it is now, for what you've just mentioned, has come in is astronomical. You know, where do you see in 10 years' time with the same investment, hopefully the same people, you know, putting money into it to get it better. You expecting a lot more crowds to come and watch and
you know
girls
what?
To start playing?
I want women's football to be sustainable. At the moment, it makes a loss because the people coming into the ground is not enough to support. People aren't buying the merchandise. People aren't following their team. There's a slight lack of identity to some of the women's teams. But that is changing. The crowds are growing. You know, Chelsea sells out Kings Meadow on a you know, game-by-game basis. That would be unheard of before.
But it may be money-wise. Yeah. The money's got to start going into the right areas.
Yeah.
More televised games.
Television, you know, selling the TV rights.
Yeah.
Commercialising the game. That's like working at Chelsea. That's kind of one of my aims. Let's value these women. And in valuing them, we're going to put a price on them that reflects that value. Previously, that hasn't happened. It's been undervalued. So if something's undervalued, well, who's going to watch or something or invest in something that's not actually getting respected in the first place? So sustainability is in... That's all I want for women's football.
Do you think you had an advantage being with your credentials and, you know, your job? Do you think that gave you an advantage over other footballers?
Now, yes, because I'm able to... The exposure I got, you know, working in an investment bank was incredible. The kind of business acumen, the ability to write emails and, you know, hold meetings and do presentations. I got exposed to that from a young age. So, yes... Going back to what we actually started talking about, was it also used against me? Yes, because of...
Football terms.
Yes, football terms.
Yeah, so you're kind of like in the middle, trying to pay your bills.
Always in the middle.
Reality-wise, you've got to pay your bills and you've got to...
Reality-wise, it's been a blessing because I'm able to earn a living and I didn't have to worry about not being able to actually match my living.
Good for you. Smart. It's smart.
And as well as doing the Chelsea stuff now, you're... You know, we often see you on BT, Sky, TalkSport, BBC. You're everywhere now.
I mean, Steve, this is my point again.
She's I'm busy. I'm tired.
Claire's sitting there saying, "Listen, you know, I'm very shy. I was very shy." She's doing BT, Sky.
Leon, you know how it is. It's a facade. Like I get exhausted from doing BT, and I think it's a learnt skill. And what I actually love about doing stuff like that is, after I'm finished, I feel the buzz that I did when I was playing. So I actually don't like doing it. But I know actually after, it replicates that to an extent when you stop playing football as well.
Do you think that helps though as well? It helps you as an individual? Do you feel as though you steer in the game as such?
Yeah, so this is relevant? I have a battle. And that's the word you said relevant there, that is the biggest issue I've had in my head. I almost don't want to be in the game because it brings a bit of negativity in my thought process. But then at the same time, remaining relevant. I literally hate the word relevant because it hurts when I say that because it sounds like clickbait. It's like you're using yourself. I think relevance, yes. In order to actually get better at doing things, you need to obviously do the punditry and stuff. But the relevance, I literally go back and forth. Do I actually want to be relevant? It's a strange... I haven't really figured that one out yet.
Claire, we've spoke about a wide range of things, lost identity, depression, you know, how ill-prepared footballers are of life sort of after the game. But how is life for you today? And do you feel in a more positive frame of mind?
Yeah, and you know what? I think actually the process of this year, I probably kept myself so busy that I didn't really want to stop and think about how I felt. So... It's only in the last couple of months that I've accepted how I've really felt. I've taken the time to stop and stop keeping myself busy, stop, you know, taking on too much, stop almost not doing things to my best ability just to be busy.
Right, so you've identified maybe slowing down
the
process.
And just going, you know what, accept how you feel.
Yeah.
Understand it. And don't be embarrassed to talk about it. And actually talk in the first place, because I didn't really talk to anyone about anything. So talking about it has been the most powerful thing. You said it before, like it's the easiest thing you can do. It sounds the easiest thing you can do, but it took me probably a good 8 months to do so.
Despite your injuries, you've achieved a lot in football. 2 Women's Super League winners medals, better than my 2 playoff winners medals. You won the FA Cup, a bronze medal with England at the 2015 World Cup. You also represented Great Britain at the 2012 Olympics.
That was great, that.
That's amazing.
Great experience.
Do you feel you could have won more due to the injury situation?
I do. I have a lot of frustrations because of injuries, and I try and turn it all into a positive and you know, think about how it's benefited me now for, you know, job stuff and being able to focus on that more. But deep down, if I'm being honest, when I start thinking about it, I get really frustrated and I almost go back into the mindset that I did after the third one, where I go, oh, it wasn't meant to be. So could I have controlled it? No, I was diligent in my training.
Yeah.
Could you have done any more? I don't think so.
I agree. And
it is what it is. Like, it sounds...
I totally agree with you on that. I mean, for me, you know, when I listen to you, it's like listening to myself at times, because I don't think I really showed my full true potential.
Yeah, I feel the same.
I train so hard. If you see the way I play, it's very explosive and very, you know, work so hard even to get to where I got to. But I guess I kind of left the game tired.
Yeah, tired.
Drained of just constantly
falling, getting back up,
trying. You know, it got to a point where I'm walking on the pitch just praying that I don't want to get injured today.
Same.
It's not about, I've got to score today, I've got to, you know, play well. I was just like, please don't get injured. So your mind, the dynamics of everything,
but then in your head already, like, I'd walk onto a pitch so uptight and anxious because I was worried about getting injured. Yeah. I was worried that actually, had I even recovered from the injury before that I'm on the pitch for. I remember last season at Chelsea, tearing the hamstring off my bone. And I just remember thinking, I was so anxious coming onto the pitch because I was worried I was going to get injured. That I got injured. And I know that if I probably was a little bit more aware of how I felt and a little bit more accepting of why I felt like that, I might not have, you know, had that muscle tear.
I did that, tore the hamstring off the bone, and I left the game bitter, if anything. I just felt...
Bitter, there is a slight bitterness. Yeah,
a little bitterness, and it was something which it took me 3 or 4 years to get over and really sort of, not reinvent myself, but be at one with where I was now. And I think that is something that is very, very difficult when it comes. And I look at myself now and think I've got a role to play with the organisation, at helping people, not telling them what to do, but just listening to what their story is and just little pointers towards my story. And me and Leon have talked about it quite a bit in a way, which is when you talk to people, you get a lot about yourself in that person because that was me, that was me, that was me. And it wasn't until later on that I felt, I felt comfortable that I'd left the game and left my career and I'd moved my life forward.
Yeah.
Are you at a point there now where you feel as though the game's gone and I am Claire Rafferty, working in the private life, which is, and I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
You know what? Not yet. I'm not at that stage yet. I'm better now, but I'm still not at the stage. And I think still being associated to Chelsea still brings that a little bit, because
insecurity.
Yeah, I guess a little bit. There's something,
or vulnerability.
I think it's that vulnerability a little bit. Mm. But when I speak to someone, I'm like, I don't have anything to do with the football though. Mm. It's like I have to prove to everyone else that I don't actually, you know, I work in the commercial team. I don't actually have anything to do with the football. Mm. And so I try and distance myself from it. And I think, as you said, it's because of that. It's a journey to do so. But yeah, I'm not at the stage yet, but I'm better than where I was.
Do you feel as though it helps you do your job?
Yeah, because it allows me to be myself.
Yeah.
Being the footballer helps me as well, because actually... When I talk about the game and when I'm selling Chelsea Football Club, of course it helps me. But actually then going, I'm myself when I'm doing this, so I'm not Claire Rafferty the footballer. Mm. That's quite powerful.
Did you ever have a point in your career where you just had that kind of self-destructive nature where you know what, you know, you might be drinking a little bit more.
You know what, yeah.
There's an addictive nature that comes in with this process.
It's a recklessness, self-destructive.
Right, yeah.
Almost doing it on purpose. Making the wrong decisions And I think the attributes as a sports person, you do have addictive personality. There's a level of just wanting the control from things as well. So I think, yeah, I mean, I probably spent the first half of the year just constantly going out with my new friends, which wasn't always involved in drinking, but it was always not going home or always trying to not go home. Because then as soon as I got home, I'm sitting there, I'm having to think about who am I? Mm. What am I doing?
So, Claire, I'm hearing...
Oh, no.
I'm hearing...
What have you heard?
I'm hearing that you've got ambition to become part of the board.
Yes.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, you know what? I think we talk a lot about actually influencing change. Right. And I've always, from a young age, my application to go to Loughborough, I said I want to be owning a football club. And in my eyes, I didn't know what that meant. But obviously not owning one. But I think being on the board, now when I think about what that is. So I sit on the board at non-exec for Lewis, which is an incredible experience. But I think ultimately I want to be able to be a decision maker. I want to try and input what I've learned from the failures. I think I have a lot to give to football. And the only way you can do that for me is probably top down.
You know, going to my last question to really close this, what does the future hold for Claire Rafferty? Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
I want to help people who have felt and feel how I felt and still feel. So in doing that, it would be using the platform that I have to do that. I would love to go into clubs and talk to some of these girls. I'd love to give it a bit of career advice or try and use, you know, the fact that I work in football still, the fact that I'm on a board of something, the fact that I can actually influence the ability for these clubs to put structures around to help this. That's my ambition.
And how are you doing today?
I'm better.
Yeah?
Better than yesterday.
That's good. But that's the main thing. This is
exactly
what I always say. Yeah, Steve. This is why we do what we do, because good days, bad days. I've always said it. You know, some days, I'll be honest with you, some days are like, I'm like, oh, man. It's not good. It's not a good day. But it's what we do, trying to move forward. I think when you continually try, no matter what you're doing, when you continually try in life, you never fail. So,
exactly.
And you're very much a trier.
So, got to give it a go, haven't you?
Definitely. Claire, honestly, it's been amazing having you on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me. It's been great to talk. Steve, thank you so much.
Brilliant, Claire. I hope people that are listening will relate to some of the issues, and I still believe there's more for you in the game in educating and helping young people, because I think when people have gone through experiences like me, Leon, and yourself have, it can only be a positive outlook for young people. So thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure to listen to your story.
Thank you so much.
We're going to get a picture now.
Here we go.
Without the sunglasses.
Oh, hey. I've got no makeup on.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.